Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is novelist and journalist Kara Hoffman. Hoffman grew up in the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York. She spent several years living and working in both Europe and the Middle East before returning to the U.S. and getting a job as an investigative reporter for a daily newspaper. She covered New York State's rural and Rust Belt communities, reporting on environmental politics, county legislatures, and crime. Her debut novel, So Much Pretty, about violence in small-town America, was published in March of this year by Simon & Schuster. I'm talking to Kara Hoffman by phone from her home in New York. Kara Hoffman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tish.
Now you dropped out of high school, according to your biography, and went to Europe, where you lived for several years. How did that experience shape you, and especially shape you as a writer?
Wow, good question. Well, it was, I would say, a few years rather than several years. It absolutely shaped me as a writer. I think it was an incredible experience to be able to get away at a time when most people around that age are breaking free or thinking about going to college. But I had an experience that I think forced me to be much more independent than I would have had to have been, you know, had I attended a school or been in a structured situation. So mm-hmm. I think it made me look at things more closely and made me think more. Kept me on my toes more.
Well, I bet it also helped you find yourself in some ways. You know, you got to take flight at an early age.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways that's true. In a lot of ways it made it so that I had to be more responsible and irresponsible both. I didn't really have much money when I was traveling, and I worked under the table jobs the entire time. To support myself so that I could go to other places and see other things. So it was a fascinating experience. I lived for quite a long time in Greece and in Israel. My time in Greece, I think, is really what shaped me the most. It's the thing that got me started writing long fiction. Mm-hmm. I ended up writing a book while I was there, or taking notes for a book while I was there. So really, it's the time that most impacted me, the things that I was seeing and the people I was meeting, and certainly the beauty of the place.
Yeah, I could imagine. Well, when you returned to the U.S., you got a job as an investigative reporter. Had journalism always been somewhat of an interest for you, or did you just fall into that? How did that happen?
Well, when I returned to the U.S., the first thing that I was doing was waiting tables and babysitting. It was I didn't just sort of walk off the airplane in my cutoff shorts and into a newsroom. but I had not really considered myself interested in investigative reporting. I was very, very lucky to get a job at a great, great community paper in Western New York. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that I did there was deliver papers. And then I really, really, really liked the feel of the place. I knew I could write, and it was something that I wanted to do. So I begged and begged and begged and begged to cover something and for page space. And finally one day there was nobody to cover a Teamster strike that was going on. And my editor sent me out to interview these guys at the picket line, and that was I actually had my son in the baby backpack that I carried him in.
Really?
Yeah, and went out and talked to these kind of tough guys about what was going on and the labor issues, and then got to call their the national rep and have a conversation with him. And after that, I was absolutely hooked, and my editor was happy with the story, and he gave me page space after that.
Wow, that's great. So you caught the bug. That's a good way to do it.
Now, oh, absolutely.
You know, in your biography, it does say that one of the topics that you often covered was the topic of violence. Now, was that of particular interest, or were you just led toward that subject because of what was happening in your community?
The first thing that I was interested in covering was environmental issues. And I think that is a way of, it is covering a kind of institutionalized violence. It's covering, obviously, like the degradation of the natural world, and it's covering sort of like an economic kind of violence that happens when places are redlined and when, people who are poor or live in ways that are not safe for them, like physically, environmentally.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first interest in covering violence. And while I was working at the paper, there was a an abduction and a, you know, later turned out to be a murder. And I covered that. I wrote about that. So that was sort of my introduction. And so seeing things from this different perspective, particularly having to do with violence against women, and it stayed with me, clearly, because So Much Pretty is, you know, definitely a reflection of that kind of stuff. Later, actually, sort of simultaneously, I had been interested in the way that children are impacted by the aesthetics of violence, how the things that people see, and I don't mean like whatever, like Daffy Duck setting himself on fire, you know.
Yeah, cartoon violence.
I don't mean cartoon violence. But the way children sort of see more graphically depicted real violence in media or in their homes and how that impacts who they become and what they do and how they think.
Well, I mean, that segues right into your novel, So Much Pretty. It's about many things, but one of the major focuses is the disappearance of a young woman in upstate New York. So tell us why you decided to elaborate and turn this into a fictional version.
Well, a lot of reasons. I mean, I think that it's not just the story of one woman. It's, you know, sad. It's sad, and it's tragic, and it's enraging, right? But it's not the story of one woman. It's the story of thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of women. And I really wanted that to be, I wanted to reach as many people as I possibly could.
Yeah, so she wanted to take this case and make it more universal, which works. I mean, it really works
Thank
in the
you.
Novel. And it also takes us into places of small towns that aren't as innocent as they seem.
Right, right. Well, that's the interesting thing about institutional violence, which of course violence against women is a kind of institutionalized violence, is that it requires the complicity of the whole community in many ways to let it happen in a whole society. And I wanted to be able to show that in a sense in a microcosm in this small town, like the things that are happening on a in a broader global level.
Well, on your website, you said you wrote this book so you could talk about family and community and the ways in which things that have become familiar to us are often not what they seem. And you depict that really beautifully. I'm not quite sure how you do that. It's a magic trick.
Thank you.
Yeah. So can you elaborate on that thought, though? I mean, are you saying that we're all living in kind of a denial world?
No. I mean, not that we're all living in a denial world. Clearly, some of us really understand these things and work really hard to change them. And that's, you know, that's important. I think, though, that there always is this sort of sense of things being other than what they are. Certainly when we're talking about violence, when we're talking about the particular kinds of denial that are so insidious that have to do with domestic violence and intimate partner violence, these kinds of things. But also, you know, and I do think that there's, how to say it, also in the sense, almost, you know, like this Platonic sense that we're only seeing part of something, right? We're not seeing
the whole picture.
Yeah, and that there, because of that, there is a sense of something being hidden, things being lost on us. And certainly in cases having to do with the topics I cover in So Much Pretty, I really think that it's broader because we're missing some of these things. We're missing so many things. It all feeds into the kind of denial that necessitates and breeds violence.
The book is reminiscent of often of what David Lynch is trying to do in his films. You know, Blue Velvet, what's underneath these pretty facades is really something often quite sinister, and the fact that we choose not to look is damaging.
Thank you. Interesting comparison. I hadn't thought of that.
Really? Yeah, I thought about it while I was reading it. It's very interesting, yeah. Yeah. Now you're from upstate New York, and this novel is based loosely on a true story, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Well, tell us why you chose to use fiction instead of, you know, as a journalist, you could have been writing a true crime book like Joe McGinnis or Jane Rule does. Tell us why you chose fiction.
Well, a couple of reasons. I think there's something slightly exploitative about telling the true story of somebody who's gone through the kind of things that the protagonist Wendy White goes through and that, as I said, so many thousands of women go through. There's something sensationalistic about it. We see that all the time. And I was not interested in... It was hard. It was actually hard enough sort of, you know, for me emotionally, to have this, you know, as a writer to benefit from something that is, you know, that is the story of great harm that's come to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that had I done that, had I written about that as a true crime story, I think that would have been a huge issue. You know, the other issues have to do with the way that the case, the true case, came out, which are things I can't talk about.
Mm-hmm. So how close were you close to this case as a journalist, and you had to sort of separate that aspect of what you knew into the fictionalized world?
I'm sorry, how do you mean?
Well, I'm just wondering, you had to leave out certain facts about this case, right, that you actually knew about.
Right, it's very, I mean, the things have been changed. It's not a recognizable case.
Hmm.
I mean, it had to, you know, the pros had to be vetted, and it's apart from, I think, the people who I worked with and the people who lived exactly where it was and who will recognize it, I don't think that it's really recognizable. I changed the locations, I changed names, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How much research did you have to do on this?
I did a lot of research. I did a lot of research on violence against women. I did, I did a lot of research that was really taxing. I'm glad I won't have to do again. And about the real case itself, I didn't really revisit that. I mean, I looked at my notes. I talked to the person who was my editor at the time at length, and another a woman who I worked with, who I was very close to. She and I were working at the paper, and we're the same age as the woman who was abducted, who was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was this chilling thing. So apart from talking to Anya Szadlo, who became a war reporter, went on from that paper to become a war reporter, and our editor, I didn't really revisit it too much.
Hmm. Well, what about research on talk about some of the other characters in the book? There's some interesting couples in the book, and there's a lot of politics in the book, and people choosing to live simple lives even though they have degrees in medicine.
We certainly have the back to the landers.
Yes.
The sort of pipe dream people who have Ivy League degrees and are trained in certain things, who decide that they're going to move to a very, very tiny place and save the world by growing heirloom tomatoes and selling them to their friends. Which I think there's something naturally funny about that idea. But
the thing is, it's happening more and more in 2011 here.
Oh, God, yeah. I know.
You're making fun of the present, Kara.
I know. I thought that. I think that's an interesting idea. I always think it's an interesting idea when people have those sort of zealous delusions, especially when they have children, which is the case in the book, where you have these two highly educated doctors who decide that they're going to go back to the land, and it's going to allow them to live by these sort of, you know, anarchist principles that are going to help their daughter be a better person. And certainly she does learn from everything that they've taught her, but there's, in the situation, because she's isolated, because they've brought her to a town that's essentially, there's nothing going on culturally for her. There's a deep, deep underlying misogyny, things like that. She also is shaped by the town in a way that they can't anticipate.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things converge.
Yeah. And you do depict the town as somewhat undereducated, a lot of the people in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did have you gotten criticism about that? Because a
Not
lot of
really.
People get defensive, and it almost makes me feel like they know what town you're talking about.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I would have to say that if there is something that I have done a lot of research on, I mean, having lived around there, of course, but also when I was reporting upstate, I did have to do research on poverty and education level, and I did live among people there, and I did see the kinds of things that happened. And I'm not talking about, you know, I'm certainly not saying that poor country people are monsters. That's absolutely, absolutely not the case. What I'm saying, actually, and which I think Stacey Flynn, the reporter in the book, also sort of understands and states, is that there's this massive gulf between rich and poor, that the stratification for wealth is very, very big, and the stratification between education is very big, and that it's systemic problems that cause people to have to live that way, to live in poverty, to be uneducated, and to have a kind of ignorance that's dangerous, because I think ignorance is dangerous.
If you're just joining us, my guest is novelist Kara Hoffman. We're talking about her debut novel, So Much Pretty. Now, one of the characters you were just talking about is a journalist. Is it based on your life, or is it based on somebody you knew in journalism? And how did you depict that?
Yeah, Stacey Flynn's, I think, a hybrid character. I mean, I certainly share a lot of traits with Stacey Flynn. But I think she also is kind of like the girl reporter that... She's a hybrid character, girl reporter. I have a couple of friends who I think are also Stacey Flynn's out there in the world.
So that must have been fun for you to write that one, because you could make things up that maybe you wished you had done.
Right, things I wished I had done. Yeah, I think there's a great an argument with an editor in there that gets to go a little bit farther than even I would go.
Ah, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is people are going to have to read this so they'll understand what that means. Now, you know what? One of the most interesting characters to me was the young girl named Alice. Athletic and brilliant and just a fascinating character. Was that based on a true character? Or tell us about her.
Yeah, Alice, I mean, it's funny. We're looking at all the ways that this intersects with reality, but I mean, so much of this is just pure, straight-up fiction. I mean, Alice is a genius. She's technically a genius, and she's a strange girl who's being brought up by these hippie parents.
Yeah,
and
she's the one that's being brought up by the parents who have this delusion that they can change the world with heirloom tomatoes, right?
right. Back to the Landers. Alice is, you know, my stepbrother was... was a child prodigy, and he was a genius. He began playing piano at three, and performing concerts when he was very, very young, when he was, you know, in his teens. And so I am familiar with what it's like to be around someone who appears, you know, at a certain level, that kind of intelligence and that kind of ability just appears like magic. Mm-hmm. Now, how did he do that? You know, how does he know that? How is he able to do those things? So that was sort of informed by a little bit by him, but mostly Alice is just a completely made up character. I mean, she is a heroic girl in many ways, you know, a heroic or tragic girl. However,
I think she's a bit of both, really.
Yeah, exactly.
But she's absolutely fascinating intellectually to listen to.
I loved her.
I'm absolutely fascinated by poetry and the genius of some young people that I have met too.
Yeah, thank you. I love Alice. And the relationship, too, I mean, I wanted Alice to also, it's the relationship between Alice and Theo, her best friend from childhood, who she's sort of inseparable with, that kind of magic relationship, I think, is really important, and it gets to, like, the beauty of who we are, you know, when we're creating something with another person.
You know, I want to go back to the subject of violence again, because it's so prevalent in this book. Did you come away from writing this and some of your experience as a reporter thinking that society in many ways and culture is conducive to violence, and it's not just, you know, like some small town infection or the way somebody was brought up? Do you really think it's systemic?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something I have absolutely no doubt about. Mm-hmm. It's not, there's no way the type of violence that we're seeing, especially the type of violence against women and the kind of exploitation of women, the trafficking of women, the things that are going on a global level, those things are systemic. They are not some individual weirdo killed his girlfriend. That's not the case.
Yeah, I know, and it is so disappointing. I mean, I'm somebody who came from the feminist movement, the second wave, and we thought we were going to change the world, you know?
Yeah.
And it's almost gotten worse in some ways.
But Tish, you did, though. I mean, you can't say that. I mean, you didn't go all the way, but, you know, certainly the second waivers can't be saying, you know, it failed.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did make some changes. You know, rape is no longer a joke.
Right.
And women have rights when they get married. Their husbands don't own them, you know.
Right.
I mean, those were things
little things like that.
Those were things that were really, really true, concrete issues when I was a kid. I know.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Now, let's talk about the fact that you also write short stories. Tell us about some of the short stories you've written. And was it a big leap to go into a full-length novel like this?
Well, no. My short stories are really very different from this kind of writing. They're really surreal. much more poetic. They're not plot-driven. They're not as plot-driven. And, yeah, I mean, I have a book of short stories out called The Wedding. Actually, I don't think I've written a short story. I'm working on another novel right now. So long form is really what I prefer. It's where I feel most comfortable, that things can be elaborated best.
Mm-hmm. And did you learn some new information about yourself as a writer by writing this book?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, like, it was a cathartic book to write. Someone's asked me that before, and I guess I need to get that answer down better.
Well, if there is an answer to that, yeah.
If there is an answer, I don't know that I learned. I guess I learned sort of how much I love to work on multiple projects and how much I love, that I love writing even more than I realized. Mm-hmm. That I really, really love the collaborative process of working with my editor. And I got extremely lucky with my editor. My editor is Sarah Knight at Simon & Schuster, and she is brilliant and ethical and does a deeply meticulous edit, absolutely preserving the essence of the language and everything that I'm trying to create. So I learned how to trust that whole process that I had originally conceived of as being, I had really very, very cynical ideas about publishing, and I think they're reasonable. I think people should have cynical ideas about publishing in many ways. But what changed for me was seeing that there are people who really love books and these things are very important to them, and that they have a very, very strong ethics and abilities in putting out literature.
Well, why do you say that people should be cynical about publishing? Is it because so many companies have hit the bottom line where they only just want to make money?
I think, yeah, I do. I think that's very true. And I think, I mean, publishing is a business. It's not, it should definitely be seen that way. You can't really separate them. These people obviously want to make money. It's their livelihood, and that makes sense. And they're competing with all kinds of other media. So it does make sense that more books, the kinds of books that I would never read, are published and highly promoted.
And also on the bestseller list. I'm amazed by the bestseller list.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting. It is. So I think, you know, people feel cynical about publishing when they think of it just, as you're saying, like the bestseller list and things that are not, quote, literary and things like that. But I really, really have a much deeper belief now that there really is great, great art being put out there, great literary art being put out there, and also that things that are written like in genre fiction, there are some amazing kind of philosophical literary works sort of being slipped in. And that couldn't be possible unless you had people who are in publishing who are really complicit with that. So I think that really, I mean, I think I really learned to have a better attitude about the whole process through So Much Pretty.
I want to ask you this too. You do delve very skillfully into the psychology of small town violence. Did you use intuition, or is it your own experiences, or your reporter that was able to tack into this world so skillfully?
I worked as a police beat reporter for a time, so I would have to drive out to a very tiny town and get the blotter, the police blotter. To the state police headquarters. And every day, there's not much going on in a small town, but every day you could really guarantee that someone was beating the crap out of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's saying it bluntly.
Yeah.
But really,
yeah.
You could go and you could pick up the blotter and you could see that was going on. So who the question really is, like, who's doing this? Is it your neighbors? Who's doing these? Mm-hmm. Who's doing these crimes? We focus so much on the victim, but the perpetrators are really the ones that we should be looking at, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to know everything about the victim. How did this happen to her? How did she come to this?
Yeah.
But in my experience, when I was doing that, I saw a lot of violence against women. That's how it was. And you know, I mean, I think we've all known people who've experienced sexual violence, physical violence. It's hard as a woman to, you know, to count up all your friends and say, oh, yeah, no one was touched by this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in other words, a lot is really going on in small towns, right? You know, beneath the surface.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a lot of what your book covers.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And tell us what you want people to take from So Much Pretty.
I think what I want people to take from So Much Pretty is a kind of understanding. I also really would hope, and it seems to be, definitely the trend, and I hope it continues, that lots and lots of teenage girls read So Much Pretty.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, that's very important to me. That's what I would like to see happen, because I think that we need to sort of broaden the dialogue about how we live and how we treat one another and what equality really means.
And as you've gone around the country giving readings and so on with this book, have you had people come up to you to talk to you about these subjects that have touched their lives?
I have, and it's really, it's difficult. It is, because on the one hand, you're happy, very happy that, you've touched them and that they're talking to you and that they can relate and that they feel enough trust to talk about these things. And on the other, I'm not a counselor, so it's hard. It's hard to do. I certainly welcome it. I'm happy, but it is heavy. It's mm-hmm. a heavy thing. It's a heavy thing to get up and read the book and then to talk maybe for, a half an hour, an hour, however long you take questions. The subjects are heavy and people often talk about things that are troubling. Although when I, the book launched from the Lower East Side Girls Club here near my house, or my apartment, and that was pretty fantastic because afterwards there was, an hour and a half discussion. All these girls from the neighborhood talking about their experiences and things that had happened to them and that had happened to their friends. And there was so much power in it that they were
kind of witnessing, huh?
Yeah, they were witnessing. They were just like champions. They were like, what do we do? And mm-hmm. let's talk about it, which was exactly what, where it's supposed to go. It's not like I'm a victim. It's like, okay, I'm a victim, what do I do?
Yeah, so weren't we empowering each other with this book? Well, Kara Hoffman, we're almost out of time. Can you give some contact information?
Sure.
Your website or?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can check out more about So Much Pretty at www.karahoffman.com. And hopefully soon you'll be reading about my new book on there.
Can you tell us a little tiny bit about what it's about?
My new book, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a book about siblings, and it's a book about a woman who's completed a tour of duty in Iraq, who's coming home to a small working class town upstate.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Well, Kara Hoffman, thank you so much for joining us. And your book, So Much Pretty, people go out and get this book. It's fascinating, and it tells us a little bit about what's going on with our culture and what we need to change. So, Kara Hoffman, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tish. This is great.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.